there is a chance that LeBron is one of the two or three greatest players ever, and that we've all just sort of been hypnotized by Steph this last year, and that's fine. But if he's one of the greatest players ever, there's going to be some kind of crowning achievement where everyone steps back and is like, holy shit. And this could be that moment. It's setting up pretty. I mean, this is one of the greatest teams in NBA history in Golden State. And it, like, the opportunity is there for LeBron. That's all I'm saying. And welcome back to Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp. On the other line, I've got Ben Golliver. Ben, what's going on, man?
Not too much. Tom Thibodeau to Minnesota, just like we've been calling for like three episodes on the Open Floor podcast. You heard it here first.
I can't believe it happened. Yeah. That's like sort of, I feel like the internet kind of willed that idea into existence.
I think it's great. And Timberwolves fans have got to be so happy. I mean, imagine how long it's been since they've really mattered. You know, it's at least a decade, if not more. Now you're totally on the upswing. The timing for it's great. How quickly they were able to get it together is great. He's going to be in position potentially before the pre-draft workouts. It just all looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I'm excited about what's happening in Minnesota. But let's start with the playoffs. I mean, it's been pretty bleak so far. Let's give each of us three lessons. What do you have so far? What's your first lesson?
My first lesson is that the game ones were the most lopsided game ones we've ever had in the modern NBA era for the first round. Average margin of victory by 20.5 points, smashing the previous record. I think it was 16. So that tells you that it's very top heavy. That any hope of, you know, some Cinderella underdog story is really even more unlikely than we thought it was coming into the postseason. I think number two lesson, after seeing the game two in Dallas, is like Oklahoma City really needs to get it together quickly. The late game stuff, everybody wanted to know, was that going to be a problem? Was that not going to be a problem?
But they looked so good. They looked so good in game one. And it was like, wow, maybe OKC does have it together, or maybe just the Mavs are that bad. And then game two was like, oh, OK, this is why we've all been sort of doubting this team for the last 6 months.
Yeah, totally. Game one, it was like, well, they're just going to jog to the second round and they'll meet the Spurs, who are going to jog to the second round. After game two, it was like, what are they going to look like when they're trying to score on San Antonio's defense in the fourth quarter on the road? I mean, it could be like 8 points and 15 turnovers in a quarter. I mean, it has been pretty bad. And then I'd say my third lesson really is that we all need to collectively hold our breath about Steph, because it's been kind of weird. The way the information's coming out very slowly, Steve Kerr having all these dire predictions. He doesn't play in game two after he said he thought he would play in game two. That stuff
it's been uncomfortably cryptic out of Golden State. So and it is also, we sort of forgot, I mean, or well, at least the injury prone label with Steph has been gone for the past few years. And this is like his one kryptonite is those ankles and the feet. So fingers crossed here. I think Steph will be okay. My big lesson from the first 2 weeks of, or I guess it's only been a week, but the beginning of the playoffs is that I just don't love basketball as much as some people. Like I can't watch the Grizzlies and the Spurs. I can't watch even the Hornets Heat series. I love the Heat right now. They're fun as hell, but like, it's tough to invest 2 hours into that series. And and Raptors Pacers was fun sort of as the opener, but I don't need to watch the rest of that series. I feel like the Raptors should win in six, and that'll be it. So I'm just sort of, I'm taking a break through this first round. I think it'll be worth it. I think that we're going to have some killer matchups over the next few weeks, but right now I'm all set on like the rest of the Hawks Celtics series.
Okay. Real quick question, then flip it. What has been the most intriguing series for you, or are we just at zero?
I'm intrigued by the Warriors Rockets series, because it's an open question every night as to how the Rockets will debase themselves. And
you basically just want to see if the Rockets are going to strike like during the middle of a game and just leave the court.
Yeah. I mean, you never like Dwight could absolutely walk out. Harden's effort levels are a point of nightly fascination. And I'm glad that Steph is resting, because I don't feel comfortable with him spending 40 minutes on the floor with Patrick Beverley. So, but other than that, I mean, the first round is we're good. I'm already all set and ready to move on. And the other thing I wrote about this yesterday, this is the number two takeaway, is that you look at the first round, it shouldn't be as bad as it is, but I would say probably about one third of the best 15 players in basketball are not in the playoffs right now. And I think it's because the rise of some of these teams who are super organized and creative and move the ball and play defense, like teams like the Grizzlies, teams like the Mavs, the Hornets, basically they have their shit together, and some of the best players in basketball are stuck in situations that don't know how to do it and basically have yet to evolve with the rest of the NBA. And I think that's one of the big reasons that we're seeing some of these lopsided games early on, is that we just like the players who could compete with these teams are stuck in bad situations.
Totally. And I also think you're seeing healthy stars, like the superstars, guys like Kevin Durant and others who have been out previously. They're now back and fully healthy and playing against teams maybe that don't have as good of health. And that's always going to be a recipe for one-sidedness. Any of the presumed kind of parity that occurred when, you know, Durant and some other of the superstars were missing time last year is basically gone. And we've returned to this world where San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Golden State, Cleveland are kind of leaps and bounds better than everybody else. Although maybe we do need to throw Miami into this contenders mix. You know, they haven't really been in our mix. We've talked about them a little bit. Did they do enough to kind of show you in their first game, hey, maybe these guys are serious, like maybe they really can push Cleveland?
Oh yeah, I'm definitely there with Miami. I mean, over the last two and a half months, they've just been sort of tearing through the league. And I mean, we'll get to this at the end, but I'm really fired up about Heat and the Heat Cavs series. And I mean, the East is more interesting just because of Miami, basically. And I mean, Whiteside is a wild card all the time, but at the same time, I think it's hard to see anyone else who could contend in the East. So I think we got to put our eggs in the Heat basket.
Yeah, Atlanta's been not too bad either. I think they've been a little bit more impressive than I expected, but they are going against a Boston team that's kind of, they lost Avery Bradley, and that's kind of like a death blow there, but they're not.
Yeah, I mean,
fun
that's
to watch. Maybe
another takeaway.
I get what you're saying about their series being kind of like a snooze fest, but they've been pretty solid.
Yeah, I'm also another takeaway for me has been the limits of some of Boston's guys. I mean, I think Jay Crowder is not 100% right now, and that has left Isaiah Thomas on a little bit of an island, even more so without Avery Bradley. But he's just sort of he's not quite good enough to get it done against some of the best teams in the league. And that was one of our questions coming in, is whether he'll be solid enough to keep them competitive. And so far he's struggled.
Totally. Well, remember my post from like a month and a half ago where I was like, here's the guys who are under the postseason microscope. My starting backcourt was Isaiah Thomas and DeMar DeRozan. And I think we can just put the
it's been rough.
Let's put the microphone back in the science closet, because both of those guys are really having a tough time. I think Isaiah's shooting something like 33%. DeMar, I mean, it's down in the 20s somewhere. I mean, his field goal numbers look like a batting average at this point. It's rough. And so I don't know really what to make of it from Toronto's standpoint. Like, they looked legitimately a lot better without DeMar down the stretch in game two than they looked with him. I thought it was the right coaching move by Dwayne Casey. I thought it was a really ballsy coaching move, because nobody gets second guessed on Twitter more than he does. Like, it's just during his games, it's like 4 hours straight of people trying to out coach him. And, you know, he's coaching for his job basically in game two. If they drop game two, they're in some serious jeopardy. They have to advance in this series. Everybody knows that.
You mean game three?
No, I'm saying in game two, when they're down 1-0.
Oh, okay, yeah,
like
yeah.
Like they're at home. If they go down 0-2 and they're going to Indiana, like that series, that's a lot of negative momentum. Everybody's going to be calling for his job again because they've had a couple of first round exits under him. They've got Jamar in a contract year and an all-star status this year. And instead of bending to all of that pressure, in these dire circumstances, basically he says, "Hey, I'm just going to sit you down and play Norm Powell, Corey Joseph, and these other guys," and it works perfectly.
Yeah,
and they look so solid, and they close out a really nice win, and now they look like they're back in control of the series. So I think big points.
Yeah, it's like McHale and Harden last year in the end of the Clippers series.
Yeah, and you rarely see that. I mean, it doesn't really happen that much. And especially when you're the coach and it's like that could backfire on you in the locker room easily. Like if you choke that game away, I mean, I don't know. It's tough. But I thought they made the right call there in game two. And I agree with what you said earlier. I think they're going to win this series. I think just their talent 1-10 is a lot better than Indiana's talent 1-10. And even though Paul George has just like totally owned DeMar DeRozan, and that's going to completely continue, I'm not sure that matters as much.
All right. So speaking of DeRozan, though, new segment, because the first round is a little bit too boring to really dig into. We're going to call this Pick Your Poison. It's sort of like Would You Rather. It's sort of like Tough Calls, something I worked on at Grantland. I'm going to throw out some choices and you have to sort of pick one. Would you rather play with Reggie Jackson or Dion Waiters?
Dion Waiters, I think, because
really,
I think the odds that you can stick him in the corner and let him jump up and down for 24 seconds and actually get a touch of the ball is pretty high. With Reggie, you're going to be the guy standing in the corner, jumping up and down, begging for the ball and not getting it.
That's harsh, though. I mean, Reggie is better than Dion Waiters. Can we agree on that?
Oh, of course he's better than Dion Waiters, but you're asking me, would I rather play with them? And if I'm playing, I want the Rock, man. I want some shots.
I don't know. I don't know if Dion is really giving the Rock up that much. And he's giving possessions away on defense, right? Maybe I'm getting defensive about Reggie Jackson after the way he was treated on the internet on Sunday.
Well, he brought that upon himself. I mean, even you have to hold him accountable for that technical foul. That was terrible, man.
Yeah, well, and he was also, there were several fourth quarter possessions where he was dribbling for 16 or 17 seconds and everyone else was just sort of standing there, which is really not how Stan Van Gundy's offense is supposed to work. So I think Pistons fans have to be a little concerned about that and him as kind of the linchpin over the next few years.
Yeah, I think reality has set in for Dion Waiters just a little bit. I understand he's probably still on that group of guys who's like totally overconfident and believes his skills are far superior than they actually are. But in Oklahoma City, he's really had to defer. Their late game offense, when they're basically putting the ball in Kevin Durant's hands and Russell Westbrook's hands every single time. If mistakes are being made, it's almost always by those guys. I mean, Russell had a really bad turnover late in game two. The ball just slides out of his hands. KD's missing shot after shot after shot, and Dion Waiters and the rest of the supporting cast are just kind of innocent bystanders to the carnage. So, he's not necessarily helping because he's not dragging defenders
not
out of the paint.
Part of the problem.
Yeah, but he's not the main source, of the issue.
That's true. He's not being trusted with enough responsibility to screw up, which is good. You can't blame Dion. Speaking of Westbrook, though. Pick your poison. You can coach James Harden or coach Russell Westbrook.
I think that's a pretty easy call. I think I'd rather coach Russell Westbrook. With where James Harden's at right now, I mean, I don't know. Who would you even rather just be around? I think I'd rather be around Russell Westbrook.
That may be the tiebreaker. I think that Russ, aside from his like hostile media persona, is probably pretty great to be around and talk to on a daily basis. Whereas Harden, I mean, it's crazy how much the Rockets have changed Harden's image in 3 years. Because he was honestly one of the most popular players in the NBA over the last, when he was with the Thunder. And now he's just kind of, everyone sort of looks at him as this insufferable character who just doesn't give a shit and just kind of makes everyone miserable. But I think the issue with coaching Westbrook is that there are certain things that he does that make him great. So you can't really coach that out of him. But at the same time, if some of the things that he does end up hurting the team. And I got a doorbell. But Harden is a little trickier. Harden is actually easier because all you have to do is make him give a shit. And he's one of the best 5 to 10 players in the league.
Yeah, I think that's just easier said than done, though, because they tried everything this year. I mean, they fired Kevin McHale in like 14 seconds into the season. they hyped him up for the MVP last year. They went above and beyond trying to, you know, get him his recognitions. And I don't really know how you push his buttons to necessarily make him lock in. It seems it's kind of a personal decision. Sometimes he wants to do it. Sometimes he doesn't. So I think if push came to shove, I would side with Westbrook's reliability. Like, you know, he's bringing it every single night. His energy is going to be super high. Granted, that works against him, like you're saying. I mean, there's a lot of defensive mistakes in game two. Anytime Raymond Felton is lighting you up in the playoffs, that's a big time problem.
I never stopped believing in Raymond Felton. I'm so proud of him.
At the same time, though, I think Harden's had a few defensive mistakes himself. And I guess if I had to choose between being overly aggressive and making defensive mistakes or being completely checked out and making defensive mistakes, I'd choose the overly aggressive one.
That's fair.
I also think, like, and you made this point before, like, if Westbrook had his own team, you know, how would he change? And I think some of the, you know, working against the greater good for the team right now happens because Kevin Durant's like right there kind of standing, asking for the ball sometimes, and he doesn't get it. And that's a really good greater good. Like, if Kevin Durant's in charge of those possessions, good things are going to happen, right? If he has his own team and all the pressure's on him to deliver, and the other options aren't as great, then you're going to have greater leeway to let him do what he wants to do. So I think for that reason, I'd side with Westbrook.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, Harden, I will say he's kind of a throwback to the poisonous generation of like mid 90s, early 2000s players who sort of created this stereotype about NBA players, or even go back to the 80s and 70s when players were really truly all over the place. And Harden's a throwback to that era when you look at him and you're just like, wow, you don't care. You're basically playing like a pickup game right now.
Yeah, like, you don't ever
it's
want
impressive
to have to,
in its own way.
You don't have to want to worry about if he's got his heart broken by a Kardashian. Like, is that going to affect his training camp shape? You know, like, you just
fair enough. So next question, pick your poison. You spend the next 5 years as a Pacers fan, or you spend the next 5 years as a Raptors fan?
That's tough. Do you get to have Paul George for all 5 years? Because if so, I'm riding with Paul George.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Paul George is really, really good. And I think one of the big stories from this postseason is he's really back to that level. And he's making DeMar.
He's definitely back to that level. My worry about Paul George, though, is I feel like his ideal destiny is as a Scottie Pippen somewhere. And he just isn't totally wired to be like the number one guy. And I don't know if that's going to happen in Indiana.
Well, if you're saying, do I have to go through the heartbreak of losing Paul George to be a Pacers fan for the next 5 years, then I'll go ahead and be a Raptors fan.
Okay.
And I think that is a pretty realistic scenario. I mean, we've talked about this before. Some of these stars have got to team up, and he does feel stranded there. I mean, they've got a nice player in Miles Turner. I think George Hill's played great defensively. You look at some of these other guys around him, though, the roster just doesn't have it. You know, you can't count on Monta Ellis. Just, you know.
Yeah. Do you think off of this question, do you think Paul, would you pick your poison next 5 years of Kawhi or next 5 years of Paul George on a different team?
I'm riding with Kawhi. I mean, I think they've got it set up so well there, and they understand how to build around their guys so well. Like, who's going to compliment Kawhi? They're just going to be able to answer that and plug guys in so perfectly. I don't see the Spurs kind of domination of the NBA ending anytime soon. You know, I think they're going to keep this 50 win streak could go on for another 5 or 6 years.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I wonder with Paul George, if he were in a situation like San Antonio, he may be even better than Kawhi.
That's really close. I'd still take Kawhi. The three point shooting with Kawhi, I guess if you were only giving Paul George like only spot up threes and all of them were created for him and all of them were pretty open, and his three-point percentage would probably go up, and his field goal percentage would definitely go up. But Kawhi is such a good shooter at this point, and I think he still has the edge defensively that I would go with Kawhi. And also just work ethic and health-wise, the minutes have stayed off of him early in his career. He hasn't had that major, major injury like Paul George has. I think it's just a safer bet to go with Kawhi.
Okay. So next question, $120 million to Hassan Whiteside or $120 million to DeMar DeRozan?
Oh, God. Can we just give it to charity?
I think I'm in. Can I just, my answer is I'm all in on Whiteside at this point.
I'm not surprised at all.
It's a mess, but I've watched him the last couple of weeks and he does enough things that if you're a desperate team, you might as well roll the dice. And honestly, the Heat should think about doing whatever they can to keep him, because there's a real mix down there that is working.
Oh, it's definitely working. I mean, and think about it. If they do beat the Cavaliers, which is on the table at this point, they have to bring the band back, don't they? I mean, at that point, like, that's what they've been working for and building all these years for. So yeah, I think they would. I think I might side with Whiteside too, but it's mostly out of just an anti-DeRozan stance. You know, I don't know how much better he gets. He's the same guy. He's not a playmaker. He's not anything off the dribble at all. You know, he's a foul drawer during the regular season. He gets locked up by all the big wings during the postseason. He takes really bad shots when he gets frustrated. He doesn't guard anybody. I mean, there's so many holes in his game. And I also think there's a little bit of, he sees himself as an all-star and he believes he's being disrespected. And so he kind of overcompensates and gets himself into trouble. So all those things, it's tough if you're going to pay him max money and have him be your guy. If those are your limitations, I think you're basically a lottery team if he's your best player. So, maybe you can say,
You know what? I'm bummed because I thought we were going to have the Brooklyn Nets as this de facto dumb team who overpays someone like Whiteside, someone like DeRozan, someone like Dwight Howard. And now with Sean Marks, and they just hired Kenny Atkinson, who, I mean, I don't really know anything about, but a bunch of smart people I know around the NBA seem to think he's fantastic. It seems like Brooklyn isn't dumb anymore. So, I mean, our options are limited for teams that are going to throw out crazy deals for these guys.
Don't worry. We still got some dumb teams. There's still some dumb teams out there. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
The Lakers are still looming.
The Lakers are always looming. Let's go to, we're going to get a little weirder here. Pick your poison, an MMA fight with Patrick Beverley or a cross country drive with Dwight Howard. Well, we'll say the cross country drive is about 2.5 weeks.
Oh gosh. Well, I love cross country drives. That's like one of my hidden favorites. So I think
is it really?
Yeah, no.
Cross country drives and birding. Those are the Gulliver passions.
I'm really into like just getting out where I'm not surrounded by any other people. And you have thrown a wrench in it having Dwight Howard riding shotgun. That's a little difficult. I think I would just bring Bose headphones and I'd go on the cross country drive. Just noise.
Really?
Just noise cancel Superman out of the picture. Enjoy the Red Rock in Utah. You know, see the sites in Texas. I think I'd go with Dwight Howard.
I don't think I could handle 2.5 weeks with Dwight Howard. Although introducing noise canceling headphones into the equation really does change things. That's a great point. So my initial answer would have been, you know, take my chances with Beverly. The thing about an MMA fight is you can tap out in the first like 30 seconds, and God knows I would need to.
Yeah, but dude, we're all paying $49.99 for it, man. If you tap out for the first 5 seconds, we're trashing you on
That's
Twitter.
That's true. Then there's shame involved. Yeah.
We're making Crying Jordan memes about you. We're really running.
I'll be Twitter bullied.
Oh, yeah. We're coming after you hard. So think about that part.
All right. So yeah, I guess I will go with the noise can. No, there's no way I can't spend 3 weeks in a car with Dwight Howard, noise canceling or not. So I go with the MMA fight. All right. You can be filmed by D'Angelo Russell for a year.
Whatever the other thing is.
I don't know. The other option is you have to watch film with Byron Scott for a year.
Oh God. Oh. is Byron Scott still the Lakers coach in this scenario, or is he just like random Byron Scott?
Because first of all, it looks like they're really going to bring him back, which is amazing.
I asked that question because remember when Mark Jackson first got fired by the Warriors and he was like preaching on street corners and it seemed like he maybe just completely lost his mind for like 2 months. I don't know if you ever saw those videos. If I have to watch film yeah. with
those
Byron,
videos were so uncomfortable that I feel like most of the internet decided not to acknowledge it not to acknowledge that it's like a part of the story.
Totally. Everybody just pretended that it never happened. They're like, we're just going to give him a pass. He lost his job. It's cool. Like if I have to
it's a strange time.
Yeah. If I have to deal with Byron Scott, Lakers coach for a year, I think I would rather watch film just to kind of hear it from his perspective. But if we're in like that post firing weird world where like anything can happen, I don't know if I want to be in a room with Byron Scott during that part
of
his life.
So hold on though. Why don't you want to be filmed by D'Angelo? What are you hiding?
I don't know if I'm hiding anything necessarily, but who knows what he could dig up. I mean, this guy's an incredible muckraker. He's got a great track record for ruining people's lives, and he's come out and admitted it. You know, I basically say, you know, he's not sure if he has jeopardized Nick Young's marriage. So no, I'm not hiding anything necessarily. I just don't want this creep following me around with his cell phone.
I just don't think I could take a year of lectures from Captain Hardass Byron Scott telling me about the new generation of basketball players. I would go with D'Angelo also because I will reiterate that I think D'Angelo Russell is cool and he would be fun to hang out with even if he were surveilling me. So I think it would be a much better option than being locked in a Lakers office with Byron Scott.
I think my answer made me sound old and your answer made you sound young. I'm okay with that.
I don't know. Young people definitely are oversharing right now. So I don't want to be one of those people, but it's better than life with Byron Scott. Speaking of life changes, you can share an apartment with Chris Paul or you can share an apartment with Matt Barnes. What's the choice?
Oh my gosh. Well, Chris Paul paid the renter's insurance, so that's good. I think I'm sharing an apartment with Chris Paul. I'm guessing he goes to bed at like 9:45 p.m. every night. He's kind of quiet.
Okay, so hold on. The flip side of that, though, is Chris Paul is probably a pretty demanding roommate. And I think that he would. So number one, he would sort of criticize your lifestyle if you're not clean, if you're not, you know, whatever. And then I also think he would sort of criticize your daily routine if you're not working to be great every day. And that could get pretty old after a few weeks, let alone a year.
I think I am working to be great every day, though. I mean, I think I'm in that same psychopath category with him. Whereas with Matt Barnes, like, I'd be afraid of his 17-foot-long snake. I mean, you know, he's got one of those. Like, he's probably got all sorts of other animals that, you know, would wake you up in the middle of the night and like potentially would be poisonous and able to kill you. I wouldn't want to deal with that. You know, the tattoo sessions at 4 a.m. where the guy comes in and is just inking him up in the middle of the living room and I'm trying to sleep. Just, you know, Derek Fisher's bloody corpse. And how do we cover that up? Like, I don't want to have anything to do with any of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Matt Barnes, he actually seems like a pretty cool, normal guy. But there would be of 365 days, 362 would probably be great. But three of those days would probably leave you with some emotional scars that won't go away.
Or jail time, definitely.
Yeah, you could become an accomplice to something. You could be a witness and have to talk to the New York Post about what really happened. So I hear you. I just think that life with CP3 would get old pretty quickly. And has for some of the Clippers. All right. So let's see, what other questions do we have here? Okay. You can let Stan Van Gundy do your taxes or let Steve Clifford plan your bachelor party.
Ooh. Well, give me the breakdown here on the bachelor party. I wasn't really thinking about this one.
Well, I kind of just, I feel like Steve Clifford is a great coach, but would not be like the most fun person to trust party planning duties to. It doesn't seem like there's a lot there. But at the same time, I mean, Stan Van Gundy, he's very overextended. Doesn't seem like he would be the most thorough person on your taxes or personal finances. So, you know, it's a tough call.
Well, I mean, honestly, like, you only get one shot at a bachelor party. And if there's an auditing situation, I mean, that sounds horrible, but it's probably not like a once in a lifetime thing where like it's going to ruin you forever. I think the stakes are just lower with the taxes.
Yeah. I mean,
let's Dan Van Gundy do the taxes. That was a very risk assess version of how to tackle this question. But I think I let SVG do my taxes.
Yeah, I think so, too. Although I'm planning a bachelor party and for some reason, I just don't really care what we do. So maybe Steve Clifford would have some good ideas.
Wait a minute. Are you getting married?
I'm getting married in September.
Oh, my God. So, breaking news.
Yeah. Steve Clifford, if you're listening, throw out some ideas.
Well, what are your ideas? Let's get to the good stuff here.
Well, I'm going to go to Seattle and just sort of hang out with some friends for the weekend. And it should be pretty solid. We've got some ideas on deck, but nothing that crazy. I think that one of the problems is you realize like I'm almost 30. I'm pretty boring now. Like, I don't want to do a bunch of like crazy shit for my bachelor party. So maybe Steve Clifford would be okay. Coaches and executives, who would be the best person to do your taxes? Who would do pull some shady moves on your behalf?
Well, I don't know. Hold on. I want to go back to the Seattle bachelor party thing, because my brother, we actually did his bachelor party in Seattle.
Yeah. We went Seattle's to one of the best cities in the country.
It's great. We went to a Sounders game, that their stadium, because it was just the summertime. You know, all the athletic facilities are great. Like going to see a Mariners game, going to see a Sounders game, that'll do great for you. We also went to Mount Rainier. Have you ever been there?
I haven't.
Well, that consider that on your list. It's beautiful.
That might be. Yeah, I think we're going to go to a baseball game, which I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I love going to baseball games. So that should be pretty great.
So there's a place at Mount Rainier called Paradise. And it's so nice that you could drive there with Dwight Howard and he wouldn't ruin it.
I don't trust that, but me, I'll definitely check it out without Dwight Howard.
I'm going to have Sam Hinkie do my taxes, by the way.
Oh yeah. And Hinkie and Presti, they've run afoul of actual NBA executives for their shady behavior.
Well, he's just going to do a 13-page list of addendums on the write-offs. And at some point, it's just going to be so ridiculous that even the IRS is like, bro, we've had enough. Five pages in, like, we're good. You could just take it all. Like, we're fine. Like, just have all the money. Like, you don't have to put in Abraham Lincoln quotes. This is just a personal tax filing. That's kind of the way I'd go.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Oh, you know who I would? Hinkie is a really good answer. I would probably choose... I would go with Pat Riley also, because I feel like Riley has been around, he's had money for a long time, and he probably knows several different loopholes that he could exploit on my behalf.
He's also been down in Miami for a while, so you know he's probably got some Cayman Island bank accounts.
Oh yeah, definitely some shell companies he could throw some money into. We'll end up in the Panama Papers. It'll be great. So, all right, last one for Pick Your Poison. Speaking of international affairs and the Panama Papers, pick your poison. Either Steph Curry's injuries return, or he's healthy for the next 10 years, but we have to endure 4 years of President Trump.
I'm not huge on trying to get into politics, but sorry, Steph.
No, let's get into it, man. this crossfire.
we're sacrificing Steph Curry to the political gods. I mean, sorry, Steph. Like, you've been amazing.
Wow.
You've generated millions of views. You're the best phenomenon in the NBA in quite some time, but you got to go.
I think that's a good answer, because I don't know if I love basketball enough to jeopardize the fate of the nation for 10 years of healthy Steph Curry. But I will say that this week of cryptic Warriors news, with the MRI and everything else, has really underscored how depressing it would be if he sort of falls off. It would be much cooler to watch teams sort of battle and figure out a way to beat this team than having it sort of crumble from within.
Well, totally. So,
and 4 years of President Trump, I mean...
So much can go wrong in 4 years. I mean,
a lot can go wrong.
You can start a nuclear war in 4 seconds, you know, and you can probably execute a nuclear war in four hours.
He's going to be appointing Supreme Court justices. Yeah, it's all right. Well, Steph.
Here's the thing about that Steph injury, to just back up what you just said. You know, I picked the Spurs to win the finals before the season, and I stuck with it before the playoffs. And obviously, that's like a prediction that I would prefer not to come true, because if it actually does come true, that means probably Steph's out of it, right? So I'm in this weird position.
Wait, you picked, what did you pick? Sorry, I missed this.
No, I picked the Spurs over the Cavs during the preseason, and then I refused
to change
my picks ever. So I picked Spurs over Cavs before the playoffs, regardless of all the mountain of evidence that says the Warriors are way better than the Spurs, which they are. So for my prediction to be correct, Steph probably has to go down. And so I'm in this horrible position where I would wind up benefiting from Steph's injury because my prediction would look right, but it would feel like the worst prediction of all time. Like, I would feel like a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah, I mean, it's not worth it. It's not worth it to be right. It would be so much, so much better to watch them lose healthy or watch them win than this third rail here is not. Everyone loses in that scenario because the first round is already kind of a bummer, but there's a lot of potential down the line for these playoffs to get like historically good. So. Fingers crossed. We'll put our faith in the medical staff in Golden State.
One last thing on Steph, though. Think of a worse gauntlet. If you had a foot injury or an ankle injury, think of a worse gauntlet than dealing with Patrick Beverley for the rest of this series, then Chris Paul for the second
round.
He should not play
again against Beverley.
Yeah, and then Chris Paul for the second round. And then the Spurs, potentially Danny Green or Kawhi Leonard, if they want to put those guys on him in the third round. And then Dellavedova potentially in the finals.
Oh, God.
Like, doesn't your foot hurt, like, just thinking about that, like, next month and a half for Steph? Like, my feet are hurting right now just thinking about that.
And there's a chance that he could have to guard Westbrook, too, which is its own. Like, that's probably, like, playing a football game. I don't know, man. It's going to be tough. All right. Well, hold on. Let's move on. Before we do, I have a quick, I want to talk to you about the NFL draft, and it's coming up fast. I still don't totally know who Carson Wentz is, but SI has a new mini series that will take you much deeper than any big board. Listen to Draft Season, where each pick is a player and each player has a story. The latest episode features former Penn State quarterback Christian Hackenberg and his experience convincing teams that he can be the face of their franchise. Find Draft Season on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or at si.com/draftseason. Do you have any hot NFL draft takes?
No, I don't know anything about the NFL draft. No.
I really like Ezekiel Elliott, and I think he's going to be very good. And it's crazy. There aren't even any good quarterbacks this year, but watching NFL teams talk themselves into the bad ones on the board has been pretty amazing. I mean, it's like Jared Goff, Carson Wentz. It's pretty shocking.
So, I will say I was impressed by how quickly Los Angeles got its Ram signage together after the move. And I think that's a pretty big deal. Yeah. Didn't they just get the number one pick or whatever?
Yeah, they're making a little splash.
This is how little I know.
But again, I want good things to happen to Todd Gurley. And they're going to trade up. They traded all these picks to take one of these quarterbacks, I think, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But you know what? This is not an NFL podcast. So you can check out Draft Season. Let's move on. Tibbs is officially in Minnesota. We've talked a lot about Tibbs and the Wolves. What else do you think? What else has jumped out at you about the coaching searches around the NBA?
Well, how bad some of these jobs are, you know? And like, congratulations, actually, I think to Brooklyn, you mentioned it, but way to go to like get a pretty good candidate quickly, you know, because that job looked absolutely terrible. And now they're kind of locked in and they can kind of pursue the Sixers, you know, long-term approach to, you know, having a player development guy in there as the coach, you know, well-respected by players. So you don't have to necessarily rush and stress too much about wins and losses in the short term. You can just kind of go forward with your bigger picture direction. That's excellent. And then you contrast that with like Sacramento. I mean, good Lord.
the names that are being associated with the King's Chalk.
It's a long list of names.
Yeah, please read them because they're incredibly depressing and we could just groan in response to every single one.
Well, Kevin McHale, Mark Jackson, David Blatt, Jeff Hornacek, Patrick Ewing, Nate McMillan, Celtics assistant Jay Larinaga, who I don't understand why more teams aren't interested in him. And then the Holy Trinity, Sam Mitchell, Vinny Del Negro, and Mike Woodson.
I retire. I'm out. I'm done with this podcast. Oh, my God. The last three are just terrible.
It's not great. Although one name that's been mentioned for them that I think actually makes sense is Mark Jackson. And it's a hot take. People, it's not a popular corner with Preacher Mark. But I do think that I don't think he's as bad as people have made him out to be. He did a good job getting the Warriors to the point that they were at. I think two or three years ago, he just wasn't the right guy to sort of take them to that next level. But he's very good at motivating guys and getting through to players, which is the big. I mean, that's the whole deal with Boogie. It's like he needs to have someone who can sort of get through to him and keep him locked in. And when you look at some of the other names, I mean, obviously, I don't think Ettore Messina or Larinaga is gonna go to Sacramento. So compared to some of the other like retreads on the board, why not roll the dice with Mark Jackson?
No, I understand. And actually, for some of those same reasons, I kind of like the idea of Nate McMillan. Maybe he's not
Nate
as high,
McMillan would be good too. Yeah,
maybe he's not as high profile, but like if you have that former player who could just sort of like speak directly, communicate directly to Cousins, you know, talk to him about his own experiences. Nate McMillan also kind of rebuilt the Blazers after the quote unquote jail Blazers era. He's been around USA basketball, so he's had a bunch of different experiences. You know, you can kind of see that maybe that's the direction Sacramento's thinking with a lot of these former players as coaching candidates. But then there's also this bigger question of like, if you're the Kings, should you be trying to find your coach that will work with Cousins, or do you just find the right coach and then move off of Cousins?
Yeah, that's another good point. And I mean, if I were the Kings, I would think about moving on from Cousins now while his value is still pretty high, because if things don't work out this next season, then suddenly things will start to unravel and everyone's going to be looking at them wondering when they're going to trade Cousins. And it's hard to get fair value back in that scenario. But right now, I mean, I would trade for Boogie over someone like Kevin Love. I would trade for him over someone like Blake Griffin. And it's strange that they seem content to, I mean, I guess they're opening a new arena, so they want to keep the core intact and stay competitive. But from a long-term standpoint, it's not really looking great.
Yeah, I think if I were them, the key is not just to pick the coach that works with DeMarcus Cousins, but also to pick a coach that would work if you did trade DeMarcus Cousins, right? Like you want to have a coach for this coming season,
that's
but then also
the dream.
The big picture, and don't just focus on one or the other because it's a fluid enough situation where you're going to have to prepare for both the eventualities.
You know what I don't understand looking around the league right now is why more teams aren't like swinging for the fences with head coaching hires. Because you look at the playoffs right now and so many of the teams who are better coached than anybody, organized, the players care, everyone plays hard. So many of them are led by assistants who pretty much came out of nowhere. And you see names like Scott Brooks and Blatt and Hornacek getting thrown around. And I just, if I owned a basketball team, I would look at the playoffs right now and say, all right, let's try to find like the next genius. And a lot of these teams just aren't really doing that. I mean, like Steve Clifford, no, he was on nobody's radar before going to the Hornets. In the last couple of years, he's been great. Budenholzer, same deal. Brad Stevens was on a lot of people's radar, but it's the same. I mean, like, I just don't understand why you would want to take a chance on like a McHale, or especially some of the teams who have struggled. Like, just go for it, man.
Oh, I feel you. Yeah, just don't hire Sam Mitchell, I think. I think that's the key.
So
whatever
Sam
you're doing,
Mitchell, yeah,
go and hire him.
So I did. Del Negro would be who is probably a very good coach, but that would really take the wind out of my sails if I were a Kings fan. I like see there's been talk of Sam Mitchell staying on in Minnesota as an assistant, which would be very cool because I think he's got a lot of insight for the players and he can relate to them. And but I just think schematically, like if you put someone else in charge and keep him on board to tutor these guys as they come into their own, that's probably the dream scenario.
I guess I go the other way on that one. I think if you're going to entrust Tibbs, I think you let him not only bring in, you know, his designated GM or assistant GM, however you want to phrase it. I think you let him bring in a fresh new coaching staff and you just start fresh. I mean, I would be trying to get rid of as many of the ties to the older regimes the Timberwolves have had as possible, because those regimes have by and large been, you know, big time failures. And this is a really critical moment in their franchise direction. It's a totally fresh start. It's a big time hire. It's going to be a very expensive hire. I'm actually shocked that their owner is willing to spend all this money to do it. I called him out in my end.
It's good.
It's great. I called him out in my end of year grades and basically said, hey, now's the time to do it. And within like a week, he was ready to pay Tibbs eight figures. So congratulations.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. I have a friend who's a diehard Wolves fan. And we were talking about this like 2 weeks ago, the day after they had beaten the Warriors. And he was like, yeah, I was saying that like they've become sort of the internet's favorite future dynasty. And he was like, yeah, I feel great, but Glenn Taylor is still in charge and you never really know what's going to happen there. But this is a good sign. I think that's the real reason Tibbs is so great for the Wolves, is he sort of announces to the league that they're done screwing around, which is healthy after the last 10 years of sort of no man's land, basically. Speaking of which, this team reminds me a lot of the Magic, and I know you didn't see the Penny and Shaq Magic. You didn't see the 30 for 30, did you?
No, I haven't seen it.
It was pretty wild, because I forgot how much fun those teams were and how quickly it all fell apart. And it's there are a lot of parallels to the Thunder, which sort of gave it more relevance for present day. But like, do you have any specific memories of that team?
Well, I mean, my biggest memories from that era were just the Penny commercials, you know, the little Penny commercials. And then, of course, the back and forth with Jordan once he came back from the time away playing baseball, and how motivated he was by that series loss, and how that's sort of like the one stain on his resume that a lot of people don't talk about.
Yeah. So a lot of people forget, I forgot, that there were like commercial wars with Shaq and Penny at the height of that team, which seems insane to me now, but the Shaq filmed a Reebok commercial where he was sort of, he knocked over little Penny. And, I didn't realize that things had gotten quite as dysfunctional as they did toward the end there.
Well, growing up in Beaverton, Oregon, we don't use the R word, So we don't, Reebok's not even, you know how LeBron like kind of came out and pretended he didn't know what Under Armour is? That's sort of like put into your blood when you grow up in Beaverton, Oregon. Reebok never existed. Dave.
I've been a lifelong Team Nike guy, except I will say that Shaq's shoes were pretty cool for a while there. Will Smith wore them in Men in Black. They had a nice little run considering how little anyone respected Reebok.
Well, the pump too. I mean, the pump was the real near breaking point for people in Oregon, I remember, because the pumps were awesome. And it's like, well, we have to pretend they don't exist and like hope Nike comes up with a similar thing in like 3 years. And but yeah. No.
And the Iverson questions too were great.
Oh, they were.
Reebok had a couple hits. Yeah, let's give them their credit. But the other thing with the 30 for 30 is the Nick Anderson sequence. Like that movie should have come with a trigger warning, because there were about 15 minutes dedicated to Nick Anderson missing those four free throws in the finals, which in a lot of ways, if you're looking back, kind of swung the finals. And I mean, it was just heartbreaking. And his career never really recovered from that, which I can't think of a parallel through the rest of in the last 15 years, someone who's sort of crumbled like that and then had it just sort of snowball into the, like the rest of their career, not being the same. Like, can you?
No, but do you know that a little known fact is that some diehard Spurs fans still hold Kawhi Leonard responsible for the 2013 finals loss.
Oh, that's a good point.
And like, even though he came back to win finals MVP, even though he's defensive player of the year twice, and he's going to be probably first team all NBA, there is that segment that like is never going to let him forget. Like, if he had made the free throws, in the 2013 finals, the Spurs would have another ring, and basically he was the reason why they lost it. So I'm glad he took a different path.
It's been lost to history, but he did miss those free throws, which at the time caught everyone off guard. And at the same time, if you the final minute of that game, or final maybe 2 minutes, there were a lot of mistakes made by LeBron as well. And he, in some ways, you could say that that Ray Allen kind of saved the day for him. That the 30 for 30 on that game and that series, because they also brought out the ropes for the Spurs celebration. And I remember Ray Allen saying, get those ropes the hell out of here. Probably in harsher language, but that game was wild too.
Oh, for sure. Well, if you had to predict one player of Nick Anderson's stature to choke away a finals this year,
I'm not doing that. I'm not wishing that on any human. Okay. After watching what he went through, because it was actually pretty painful. I mean, the only comparison I have is Darius Washington at Memphis like 7 or 8 years ago, or I guess maybe longer than that now. But that was pretty brutal too. Parallels to the Thunder. Go ahead.
I was going to say, didn't Derrick Rose have some free throw issues too at Memphis?
Yeah. But Derrick Rose was also so good that he was beyond reproach at the time, because they would not have had a shot at even getting that far without him. But I was also watching, remembering Harden in the finals in 2012. That was because that was one of the weirdest things I've seen. Also, he looked like his talent had been stolen by the Monstars, and that was pretty rough too. And kind of, I mean, you could argue that if he had played better, they would have felt more comfortable giving him the max, and like all of this would have been different.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's one that I hadn't thought of, but that's definitely belongs on the list. You really don't want to throw a player under the bus and say that he's the next Nick Anderson. I'm kind of surprised by that.
Absolutely not. Because I actually covered that series, and I remember standing with 30 other reporters next to Harden's locker. And it was sad because everyone was just sitting there being like, what is going on? What's happened to your game? And he was one of the big reasons they had beaten the Spurs in the earlier series. So Harden has not done himself many favors since that series and since going to Houston. But I won't wish Nick Anderson struggles on anybody. So, all right, let's finish up here with, do you have any playoff hopes for the weekend? And then let's talk Heat Cavs.
My playoff hopes for the weekend would obviously be that Steph is healthy. I'm not sure that's going to get answered. I'm not sure we're even going to know, because they might just keep resting him. But that's clearly number one on the agenda list. My other hopes are that the one-sided series just stay one-sided and they get done as quickly as possible. So let's just get Memphis out of there, put them out of their misery. I think the one series that might still have a chance is Portland versus LA. So I'd like to see competitive games there. Hopefully Portland can make some adjustments in game two, which is tonight.
Do you think I feel bad? I feel like the internet sort of jinxed Damian Lillard going into that series. I had a lot of high hopes for him, and it just has. I forgot that all of last year, Chris Paul straight up owned Damian Lillard, and that's what happened in game one.
Well, you should have read the SI.com playoff series preview by none other than myself, which said, no, I'm kidding. No, Chris owns Dame. I'm like, there's a reason why one of them's the baby in the commercial. You know, it's just kind of how
it's
that. I think that they're really going to have to get creative, you know, move him off the ball, get him some stagger screens where basically like four guys are setting picks on Chris in the same possession, just so that, you know, put him through a gauntlet to try to get Damian open. But he has very little help. I mean, guys like Al-Farouq Aminu and Mo Harkless not being able to stretch the court in game one was just a disaster. And, you know, they're trying to do some of the same stuff Golden State does, you know, play 4-on-3 when the guard gets trapped, and they just don't really have the guys to do it quite right. So they got issues. They have big issues defensively.
Can we get Boogie in Portland? How do you think that would look?
Well, you know, the guy that everybody wants in Portland is Hassan Whiteside. That would be pretty interesting. I mean, it would fit money wise. It fits positionally. You know, there would be enough touches for them, I think, for him, I think, even if you have CJ and Damian, you know, still being your main scorers, I think they could accommodate Hassan Whiteside. If any team is going to throw a max at Hassan Whiteside, it probably should be the Blazers.
Yeah. They also have a stable environment that seems to get the most out of people. And that's what I want for Boogie. Because I think that he's missing that group that can take him to another place. But if he's the leader, it's not going to be great, as we've seen. I don't really have playoff hopes for this weekend. I'm ready to move on. I would like to see the Celtics bounce back a little bit and make this interesting against the Hawks. Because I think watching Isaiah and Crowder and Evan Turner, it's a fun group and more fun than the Hawks for me. But I don't know, man, it's not looking good without Avery Bradley. They need shooting.
Yeah, I would actually go to the Cavs Pistons series. I mean, that's probably the one that I'm actually hoping for in the Eastern Conference stays interesting. I thought that game one was really good. And we'll see where it kind of develops, but you know, there's a lot of subplots. You know, how are they defending LeBron? Are Kyrie and Kevin Love still going to keep playing well after they did, like, you know, play pretty well in game one, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's probably,
and they're going small with Love. Let's talk about the Cavs. I have kept this close to the vest, but I kind of feel like the Cavs could win the title this year, and they've been lurking. They've got a lot of talent, and Cavs Heat is going to be a flat out war. I'm like, let's fast forward to Cavs Heat, man.
Okay, so how do they keep Kevin Love on the court against the Heat?
Go small. Love at the five. Well, it can work.
He's horrible defending the five, though. I mean, just terrible. That's the issue.
Not what the numbers indicate. Do you want me to pull this up? Here, let's see.
Pull the numbers up against the last time they played the Spurs. They tried to use Kevin Love in that role, and they got scored on 8 straight times in the fourth quarter, and Love was the problem on 8 straight possessions. Like, I think it works in theory, but like when you're going against San Antonio or Golden State and they know exactly how to pick on you, it's just going to fall apart.
Yeah, I think you might be onto something there, but I also think if the offense is good enough, they can start to do some things there. And I mean, the Pistons, for instance, could not take advantage of it with Andre Drummond, and the Cavs were just like lights out with Love on the floor. And the other reason I'm not that worried is because the Cavs can just bench Love, and that's a solution too.
Yeah. So we talked about how they were just going to dump Mozgov basically.
Yeah.
And to me, that was the right play, and it worked out really well. I mean, I think the Love, Thompson, LeBron lineups looked good, and I think that they're going to keep riding with those. And I guess the one question mark is, like, do you bring Channing Frye back into the mix a little bit here, get some more length? But, you know, it's pretty much played out, game one at least, kind of how we expected it. I mean, was there any point of that game where you were like, oh, man, they really need Mozgov back in? Like, absolutely not.
No, and I think Mozgov has also been battling some knee issues all year, so he's not the same player. He made a big, big difference in last year's run, but he's not the same player. But mostly, it's the Heat looks so good right now that we're going to see LeBron challenged more than he's been in a couple years, because the Cavs are, however excited I am about their potential, they're more vulnerable than any team he's been on since since early on anyways. And then, I mean, this Heat team is not those shitty Pacers teams from the past few years of his Heat tenure. So it's going to be pretty cool.
I mean, I think it's going to be the best storyline, no question about it, if he gets there.
I mean, he's sat down in a couple of the games or sat out in a couple of the games where Cleveland's gone to Miami. I feel like Miami may still be a little bit in his head, which is another interesting subplot.
Well, and I think he courts some of it too with the photos of him working out with Dwayne Wade and trying to kind of spark that talk. You know, he was doing
that. Yeah, it's just a weird dynamic.
Yeah. It's almost like I think it's the guaranteed way he knows he will get talked about the most, you know, like if he just kind of plays up the free agency stuff or plays up the history stuff, and he knows everyone will make him the headline even over Steph. So I think from that standpoint, you know, LeBron would look at that series as probably a big win because they would be the headliners, I think, even over Warriors Spurs Western Conference Finals, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm ready. And we will need it after this first round because I don't know. We need something. We need a shot of life here. Any final thoughts from you?
Well, just real quick on the Kevin Love center thing. You know, they can blow basically anybody in the East off the court with the possible exception of Miami when their guys are really shooting well, just, you know, going all offense with that lineup. My big question is, like, and the numbers kind of prove this during the regular season, like overall offense wise, like, are they going to be efficient enough even with that lineup to, you know, go head to head in a shootout with the Warriors or in like kind of an execution style game with the Spurs, if Love is going to be the big time defensive weak link inside. And that's where I get real nervous because he's just so easy to exploit. He just timing it in terms of his rotations and his footwork and quickness and all that stuff is just not quite there. And so now you just kind of wonder, well, what direction do you go if you're Cleveland? And it could be that they play one style basically in the first three rounds of the playoffs, and then they just revert to the slow down bully ball stuff that they did last year during the finals against the Warriors, more out of necessity, because that just might be a more successful formula. And I think one thing about the Cavaliers that you have to like is that they can adjust. You know, they can play lots of different ways. They have a very deep roster. They can go big, they can go small, and that's helpful. And they may need to rely on that. And it's very possible what we see here in the first couple of rounds is not what we wind up seeing in June.
Yeah. So I like a lot of those points, especially the ability to adjust. My three big reasons for the Cavs, for picking the Cavs here, is that number one, I don't know if the Warriors can stay healthy. And if you take a couple of those, Steph aside, we're rooting for Steph to stay healthy, but they have a much tougher road and will be a little bit banged up as they proceed here. At least in my hypothetical reality where Cleveland wins. But the other two things that are even bigger though, is that the Cavs have looked off all season, but the playoffs will give them a pretty great opportunity to get some momentum for the next 2 months and really start to feel good going into the playoffs or going into the finals. And then number three is the big one, is there is a chance that LeBron is one of the two or three greatest players ever. And that we've all just sort of been hypnotized by Steph this last year. And that's fine. But if he's one of the greatest players ever, there's going to be some kind of crowning achievement where everyone steps back and is like, holy shit. And this could be that moment. It's setting up pretty. I mean, this is one of the greatest teams in NBA history in Golden State. And it, like, the opportunity is there for LeBron. That's all I'm saying.
Well, there's no question if he knocks off the Warriors or even the Spurs this year, it'd be his most impressive finals victory, because the other two, not to diminish
them, it'd be
them,
a title for Cleveland. It'd be a big deal.
Oh, it would be the high point of his career, undoubtedly. And I think, you know, look at his previous two title wins. I mean, his role in them was a central role, but it wasn't like the overwhelming predominant role where it was like all him and nobody else, right? And
yeah,
there was the cramping issue in the first one. The second one, you know, he gets saved by Ray Allen. To me, like, this would be on his terms completely if he did it this year. And for that reason, like you said, the Cleveland angle, and also just reclaiming the, you know, King of the Mountain title from Steph, For all of those reasons, it would be by far his best career achievement, no doubt. And it would be the most memorable moment of his career, too.
Yeah, you know, the table is set. First, we got Heat Cavs, too. There's a lot to look forward to. And yes, we will be deleting this podcast when the Cavs lose in five in the finals. But for now, anything is possible. So thank you, Ben. And if you like this pod, you can subscribe to us on Stitcher, subscribe on iTunes, and we will be back next week talking playoff action, hopefully better playoff action. All right. Take it easy, Ben.
All right. Take care, man.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.